husbands and wives have a solemn responsibility to love and care for each other and for their children. Children are an heritage of the Lord. Parents have a sacred duty to rear their children in love and righteousness.
We welcome you to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. I'm Matthew O. Richardson, second counselor in the Sunday School General Presidency, and today we will be talking about friends or foes, helping our children and youth be able to navigate friendships and peer experiences. I'm joined today by four special guests, and this is actually our second episode on this topic, and so I'm actually really excited to hear what's going to unfold on this one. There's a lot to be said. I'll quickly introduce everyone. We have Wynn Egan, who is a member of the Young Men's General Board. Welcome, Wynn.
Thank you. Great to be here.
Parent, grandparent, educator. Did I miss anything else?
You hit it right on the head. And cookie maker.
And cookie maker. Oh. Okay, well, we saved the best for last there. We also have Cheryl Esplund, who is with the Primary General Presidency, second counselor. Welcome, Cheryl.
Thank you. It is so good to be here.
Same kind of qualifications, parent, grandparent, knowledgeable individual of all things.
24 grandchildren.
Oh, boy, that brings a lot of knowledge in and of itself. We have also Bonnie Oscarson, who is the Young Women's General Presence for the Church. Welcome, Bonnie.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
And then we also have a newly called board member for the Young Women's General Officers, and we're thrilled to have you here. And we have Denise Lindbergh. Welcome.
Thank you.
Now, I didn't spend a lot of time on introductions. We did that in our last episode, so let's just jump right in. In your experience in watching, whether it be in your callings as parents, grandparents, observing in your wards, watching individuals, primary age children, all the way up to youth, and teens and tweens, what challenges are they facing when it comes to peers? Now, we could call it peer group pressure, but that could be a positive experience, or that could be a negative experience. And Denise, you were mentioning I like this, so let me let you do that, isn't peer group pressure really this? And how did you say that?
Well, what I was trying to say earlier was that it's what the influence that our children and our youth and their friends have on each other.
On each other. And I like this. And family has that influence, and we influence each other. I just love this concept, is it's not necessarily pressure or forcing to do one thing or the other as much as it's influencing one another in many different ways. So with that in mind, what kind of influences are our youth and our children dealing with when it comes to peers, especially with peers?
Just a very quick mention of a book that's really very old. It's called Positive Peer Culture. And what it speaks to is, how do you take a group of boys or young women or both and create a culture that's really supportive and sustaining? And one of the questions they would often ask in a kind of a therapeutic group would be, who needs us the most today? It's a really great idea. Who needs us the most today? And how can we as a group really help this person today?
That's really good. I like this. I like the concept of being able to create the culture. Now, with that in mind, then, I have a son who's in high school, and I often go down and I'm at the high school quite a bit to different activities. We try to chaperone. We try to get into the environment to see what he's going through. And I don't want to be overreactive here, but in some ways, that's a toxic culture down there. I mean, you have friends that come up and they you wouldn't know that they're friends, the way they speak to each other. And so there are challenges going on here, and building that positive or finding ways to help in that culture is really good, Wynn. Cheryl?
Well, I was going to say, you know, just society in general is becoming more coarse and more rude and more angry and more, we just see it just kind of going downhill, and people tend to follow along with what they see and think that it's just normal. And we have to stand up because we know better, and we can help. We can be an influence.
This is so good, and I like this concept, is the way sometimes the culture is or the environment is, children and or youth sometimes will feel, as you said, Cheryl, it's normal. And if there isn't a voice to say, oh, by the way, this isn't necessarily normal behavior, there are ways that we can change this. You don't have to be bullied the entire time. You don't have to feel excluded. That's not necessarily right or normal.
You know, one of our general authorities, Elder Richard G. Scott, once said that no one intends to make serious mistakes. They come when you compromise your standards to be more accepted by others. So he challenges the youth to say, he says, you be the strong one. You be the leader. Choose good friends and resist peer pressure together.
This is good.
So getting allies, looking for others that share your values and strengthening those relationships. You know, once one speaks up and says, you know, I don't think that's such a good idea, others will have more courage to speak up too.
I agree. I think that's really important. Wynn?
Well, one of the things that's really interesting about young men and the Aaronic priesthood, when you think about the description in the Doctrine and Covenants that describes the role of teachers, one of the phrases is, see that there is no hardness. See that there is no backbiting. We'd call that, you know, gossiping right. And what have you. So clearly, for young men and for young women, they're to respond to each other in loving and supportive ways where they really go after brotherhood and sisterhood and all that that means.
Well, and just like we hear it said so often by our prophets, true friends are those who help us become more like the Savior and more Christ-like.
I like that. And you know, I love in For the Strength of the Youth, just simple one-liners they use throughout to help youth to understand. And sometimes it's, well, if you want true friends, be a true friend, be a good friend, et cetera. Bonnie?
Our previous discussion was mostly about families, which
yeah.
I think is interesting. We talked about how to have strong relationships with our children in the families. And I think what that conversation was all about in relation to what we're talking about is that we are preparing to send them out into this cold, hard world where they're going to be exposed to negative influences. And what we were talking about was sending our children out with a sense of self-worth, a sense that that I am strong enough, I have good values, I'm strong enough to stand up and to speak out and to have a voice in this. It does begin in the home, but I think it all has to do with how they feel about themselves. Are they going to be able to withstand the negative pressure when they come?
Let me piggyback on this, and this might set the stage for some other things that we talk about. We have the notions of victim, perpetrator, and bystander. And far and away, most of us are bystanders. And one of the things we clearly know, even in a bullying situation, if one bystander will counter the bully, within 10 seconds, he stops bullying. So we need to help bystanders understand that this is what we do. We stand up for things. We have this moral compass that says, when I see these kinds of things happening, where somebody's dissed or they're spoken of in an uncomplimentary fashion, they know this is my time to stand up.
This is really good. And when you say the moral compass, I always also thinking of the moral courage. And I was thinking of the young men and young women's theme of a few years ago of be of a good, you know, of a good courage. And that might not mean always courageous, but of a good courage for the moment. And if you can have that courage for just the moment, I think if I understand this, is you're helping individuals in other circumstances to create these allies. That this is really nice.
Well, and what I'm saying too is 80% of the time when someone's bullying someone else, there are other people there. And they can make such a gigantic difference in what happens to the victim.
This is great.
So you're asking that and really telling us that what we need to do is not be so withdrawn from the moment. Participate, step in, and be willing to take that initial step to be able to speak up. And even by speaking up, even in a mild tone, we can change the dynamic of what's going on.
Yeah, and generally speaking, one of the things they know is that those who speak up in terms of power distribution, they're usually lower than the bully. But just their mere willingness to say, stop that. Don't do that.
This is good. As a matter of fact, I'm starting to think of it in a way as when you're describing the three groups, I'm almost thinking, well, let's get rid of the bystanders because actually we're all participants. It just means we're not participating very well or appropriately. And when we can teach children to be active in their own experience and in the experiences of others, as well as youth, what a powerful construct that is. Cheryl?
Well, you know, I read an editorial talking about this very thing we're talking about, and it said, it was on the subject of bullying, and it said there's been a lot of efforts out there to increase awareness and to dissuade the bullies from bullying and you know, prosecution is being beefed up and schools are being trying to make schools accountable for what happens at school, but the problem still exists. And it said, and so as a society, just what we've been talking about, we have to stand up and say this will not be tolerated because it's not going to come through laws. It is going to come back to our homes and what we're teaching our children and how we all stand up for right, those of us that know what's right.
This is so good.
And let our voices be the loudest.
This is really good. So here I am as a parent. And I'm listening to this and I'm thinking, you know what, this sits well with me. I have a child that's in elementary school or junior high school, middle school or high school, whatever it might be. And I'm thinking, you're right. I hope my children will stand up. I hope they'll help each other. And then all of a sudden, I'm just thinking here is there might be others that are thinking this, that are listening to this and saying, yes, I believe in this. Now, how do I help my child do that? What can I do to help them? How can I nurture that? I mean, some parents will actually go down to the school and they're kind of be the bodyguard experience and they'll make sure that this happens. But that's probably not appropriate. So give me some ideas here to parents that are thinking, now, how can I help my child do this, whether they're in elementary school or in high school, to have that moral courage, that moral compass, and do these things in their circumstance? They might be the ones that are being bullied. And that's a broad range, isn't it? I mean, it's not just physical bullying. It's so many different ways as well. Help me on this as a parent. I'm ready. Give me the ideas here.
Teaching our children that they have a responsibility to others around them to protect. We can start in the home by teaching brothers and sisters, you know, watch out for each other. When you're out in the world, you have responsibility to see that your sister or your brother is safe. And start teaching that we have a responsibility for our fellow man.
Bonnie, I really like that. As a matter of fact, I'm thinking of the youth curriculum that's been going on for the last year or so, is we do this, is we put them in a circumstance with young men, young women, and in Sunday school where you have the both genders mixed, where they're learning about these things. But here's a thought is when you're speaking, I think, wow, this is actually quite powerful. We also put them in circumstances where they practice and they discover together that they can have moral courage in an environment that hopefully they can say, wait a second, I can speak up, and I've done this in my young women's classes or in my Sunday school or my young men's classes, and I can make a difference because they're actually voicing it rather than just learning about it.
And can I point something out about this new curriculum that as we're getting reports of how it's working and the youth are being encouraged to be teaching one another, when we ask youth in focus groups, what is your favorite thing about this new style of teaching in Sunday school and young men and young women, the thing that comes out every time as their favorite is we like learning from each other.
Yeah.
We like learning. We can learn from each other. We can teach each other. They like learning from each other, and they respond to it much better than learning from an adult teacher.
And
actually,
they gain strength from each
and
other.
And it strengthens them,
Yeah, they find strength one from another. It's really an interesting concept when you look scripturally, is that we're edified one of another, you know, is they finding strength. And just to piggyback on that is one of my favorite comments from youth curriculum when I was reading through some of the feedback was one that stood out for me, and I have not since forgotten it. It was I don't know if it was a young man or a young woman, but it just said, I discovered I have a voice and it matters. And I thought, oh, isn't that a nice thing that they have a voice and the voice does matter for themselves and others? Cheryl, you're going to add some.
Well, I just remember my daughter telling me an experience she had. Her teenage daughter was going through kind of some hard things at school. And my daughter said, you know, I didn't know the answer. And she said, I just lay on her bed and listened to her. And then I cried with her. And she said, that's sometimes I just think as parents, you're asking, what can parents do? They need to know that we do care, that we are listening. We might not know all the answers, but there is somebody that does. And we can turn them toward the Savior and turn them toward the Scriptures. And boy, the Scriptures are just full of examples, you know, Laman and Lemuel and bullying Nephi and the vision of Lehi with the fingers pointing and the tall and spacious building. And there's lots of examples from the Scriptures that we can. And then just to relay our own personal stories sometimes, that they see we've been through some.
There is life after you.
Yes, yes.
This is really good. Okay, so is there ever a time for parents to intervene? Is it ever appropriate for them to take action and help?
I think the intervention takes place with the child in one of those meaningful conversations where you invite the, first of all, you want to let the child know that you sympathize and you're, you know, you feel just so, you know, hurt that they're experiencing this. So you first let them know that it's safe to express the concerns they have. But then it gets back to problem solving. And we give them opportunities to say, well, what do you think? What are some things that you've thought about that you might do? And if they're not very good at generating that, you pose something. What about this? What if in this instance you did this? Then we have them explore consequences of those choices. And then we say, which one makes the most sense that you'd like to try? And what do you think the outcome would be? Because like I said, our lives are nothing but a series of problem-solving events. And we want them to become skilled in solving their problems. It empowers them. It helps them.
I like that. Skilled in solving. No, these are, I'm just inserting, their own problems.
Exactly.
And I like
yes.
that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Cheryl?
In fact, did you read that article in the paper the other night about snowplow parents?
No.
That just, you know, instead of the helicopter parents, it's the ones that just go through and just remove all the obstacles out of the way, you know.
Well, I think what's so great about that, you know, we have two kinds of enabling. Enabling makes possible. So you can make possible very positive things, or you can enable things that aren't helpful. And the snowplow is unhelpful enabling.
Yeah, I like this. I was reading an article, and the line comes up, you cannot pick your child's friends, but you can influence the groups that they associate with. And so you can enable experiences, but you can't necessarily set it in stone. I like what's being said here. This is very good. Other thoughts that come up?
Bring them into the home. Oh,
absolutely.
I just loved my children to bring their friends home. And I just kind of be invisible and just listen and see what was going on and what they talk about and how they get along together. And, oh, sometimes we'd have just a house full of different groups of children in different rooms. And that was some of my most favorite years.
So you, you create a home atmosphere that makes your home be the place that everybody wants to gather. I know when we moved to Houston, Texas, we decided to put a pool in because it's a pool culture anyway, but we wanted our kids to hang around at our house with their friends because it's huge to be able to just sit back, as you say, and watch, and you know who your kids are associating with and you know which ones are having a positive influence on them. And you can help arm them then, you know.
And I think it's important to be able to observe and, you know, in a way, as Cheryl said, to be invisible. But I think it's also important to engage with your children's friends. Learn to know them. Get to know them. Understand who they are. You know them by name. Know what's important to them. Because in doing that, you also know what kinds of influences your children are dealing with.
This is such a good comment. As a matter of fact, I was thinking, I wish my wife were here. She's such a master at this. As we have a high school student, and she invites once a week everyone over for lunch, so they all congregate. And it just is an amazing experience to me, is what she pulls out of these kids. So she doesn't just disappear, but she's worked herself in a situation where she's engaged with them, and she asks them questions, and I'm thinking, you have the most courage of any person alive, and they respond to her because they're used to her, they know about, they respect her, and they love her. And so as a result, we're learning a lot about what our son is going through simply through the mouth of the friends because of the engagement, the association, the observation, the discernment, etc.
And rather than send him home when you're ready to eat, we'd just bring him around the table and invite him to stay.
That's nice.
And be a part of family prayer or whatever you're doing.
Yeah, that's a good thing, is we kind of had that motto too, and we thought, I don't know if we're doing this right, but if you're in Rome, you're going to be doing what the Romans do, and if it's time for us to have family prayers and you're here, hey, you're part of the family. Come and join us. And it's been interesting to see how teenagers that would seem not very enthusiastic about spiritual experiences actually embrace the opportunity, and they like what they're feeling in many cases. Anyway, that's been our experience. Wynn?
I love this notion of food. Food.
So do teenagers.
And so the intervention itself or the cost that's involved can be reasonably minimal. And, you know, like a scone night or peanut butter and jam or whatever it is. But food is just a great way to bring people together. And boys love to eat.
Well, you know what I found is, and I hope that I'm appropriate on this, but in my observation over the last 9 years of watching these individuals in our home and stuff, it's not just boys. We found that these girls love food, and they actually are so engaged in it as well. So I love this concept. It is universal.
In fact, one of the most fun activities that my college-age kids, because we lived in Provo and BYU right there, one of the fun things they did was bring their groups up and make food, make dinner, make
fun.
Whatever they wanted to eat.
My kids all ran track or cross country, and our favorite thing was to have everybody, the whole track team over, at least their closest friends on the track team, for a carb party the night before, where we'd serve mounds and mounds of spaghetti and just, you know, keep piling it on the plates. And that was a great way for them to, you know, bring their friends into our circle and bond with us. And
this is great. So we'll meet at your house tonight at 7, right, for the carb party?
You,
this
would be
great.
See, Matthew, we're coming back to the importance. Some refer to them as rituals. Some refer to them as traditions. And there are things you can do with young children and teenagers and tweens that are these kind of thematic things that you do that center on food or board games, but things where when the kids come, it's a rich time to do something, but it's accompanied by conversation.
This is really nice. Some people get a little nervous when we use the word rituals for traditions, and I actually like that because it connotes that there's a purpose to it rather than this is just a reoccurring event. Actually, we're doing this for a purpose, and you've been mentioning these wonderful purposes that come out of these events. This is really good. Let me ask you your advice or your thoughts on this one. Maybe some people wouldn't think this is a peer experience, but it definitely is. What do you do when children or others feel lonely? In other words, they're excluded and they want desperately to be involved. So it's not that they're receiving a negative influence or maybe even a positive influence, but they're not receiving any influence from their peers at all. What can we do to help circumstances like that as perhaps even leaders, parents, etc.?
I think one of the great lessons I learned growing up and in raising my children was that we overcome our own problems and our own loneliness by reaching out. And if we somehow, when a child is going through isolation or loneliness, can encourage them to find opportunities to serve, it makes them feel better about themselves, first of all, but it also will draw somebody into their circle.
That's nice.
I think turning ourselves outward and encouraging our children, you know, to find ways to reach out to somebody else.
This is really nice. As a matter of fact, I was watching in a high school setting not long ago where that was brought up and let's serve. And they started saying, well, maybe we could go because there was a temple nearby. Maybe as teens we could go do baptisms or have the opportunity to visit the temple and started inviting people from, in some cases, some would say the most unlikely peers. And yet it created a nice little group of exposure to opportunities to serve and to create these friendships or associations.
You know, we had a focus group not long ago with parents of children with disabilities. And, it's just heartbreaking to hear some of the ways that they are left out and feel so lonely. And somehow we need to help our children reach out and bless their lives
that's so help important. Them. Help them be aware and provide opportunities or at least suggestions. I think of one thing, once again, my wife, not to toot her horn, but boy, her horn is worth tooting, actually, is ways that, for example, even with things like birthday parties, she doesn't overbear, but she'll make these wonderful suggestions. So have you considered inviting the rest of the boys in the ward? Have you considered inviting this group out here? And in many cases, our children, I've noticed, it didn't even dawn on them that they might be excluding. This might be an opportunity for this. And she would make these little suggestions, and she does it in such a wonderful ways that our children are like, hey, I just came up with this really good idea. Maybe I should invite some other people from the ward, you know, or something like that. But I think sometimes we can help rather than stepping in and forcing or doing these, but maybe making suggestions. Here's a way to help with individuals with special needs, et cetera.
The whole notion of inclusion is so powerful. I know many of you have seen the videotape that was produced by the young man where this gal, who's a young gal in high school with a disability, and she's adopted by essentially 5 football players. They eat with her at lunch. It's just so powerful when people switch to service, not protecting her, but including her.
Right.
it made such a gigantic difference. I mean, I think it's so reciprocal. What happened to her was just overwhelming in terms of goodness. What happened to the young man was equally powerful.
So as parents, those who are listening to this program and trying to find ways to help their own children, I'm hearing different things like suggesting and providing opportunities or supporting. Anything else come to mind that would be helpful as they're helping their children wrestle with these situations, like even things like rumors? Or today's society is so different than when I was being raised because, for example, I didn't know a lot of times when I wasn't included. I just didn't know. And then I look back and I'm thinking, you know, ignorance was bliss back in those days. I didn't know I wasn't invited to that party or to that event, or I didn't know I wasn't having fun. Today's standards, you find, especially when you get into the tweens and the teens, they know everything about everybody, what they're doing immediately, and everyone's Twittering, tweeting, and Instagramming and stuff. And as a result, as a parent sometimes, how do I help my children deal with these types of influences and pressures?
Well, you brought up an important point. We now are dealing with social media.
Yes.
And our youth are so embedded in that with tweeting and Facebook and everything else. And it's introduced a whole new problem with negative peer pressure and bullying,
right,
in that there's the ability to anonymously bully somebody. And I think it means that it escalates a little bit. You can, you know, they take it a step further and make it more mean and more mean-spirited because you don't know who's doing it. I think it's important that we teach our children responsible use of cell phones, and that's just a whole new huge issue that you could probably spend a whole program on.
Oh, and I really like this. I like how you said responsible use, and sometimes it's appropriate use. In my opinion, and this is just my opinion, is these are tools. And in many cases, it seems like we're using a tool for the wrong purpose. And as a result, some people never know that you actually should talk to someone face-to-face, and that's actually a good thing. I found with some of the younger generation that has never even crossed their mind, oh, wait a second, that might be a good idea. So responsible and appropriate use. Other thoughts?
The tool becomes a weapon 24/7. It can happen most any time. So we begin to think about ways, how do we control their access? A lot of parents will actually have a check-in procedure so their cell phone comes in at night.
Right.
You know, the average number of texts in a month for teenagers exceeds 3,100 hits in a month.
That's 100 a day.
That's 100 a day. So this
I don't
whole,
even have that many thoughts in a day to share.
And the other thing is to help them become discriminating, to get to the point and say, what makes sense for me? And how much should I access something that's really hurting me?
This is such a good point. As a matter of fact, being a little bit personal on this one again, is sometimes seeing some of the tweets, and we've encouraged our children to share, is if there are things that are coming in you wouldn't want other people to see, you might think second thoughts about those kind of things. But sometimes we'll see tweets coming in from my son's friends that are saying things, really they're crying out because they're lonely. I don't like it when people don't text me back or tweet back or, hello, is there anyone out there? I'm spending another night all by myself. And being able to help them understand when it's appropriate to share certain thoughts and what, you know, is an important part for an adult to be able to say, here's some thoughts. Maybe this is the best one to keep to yourself or keep in our room and let's deal with this and find other ways to elicit help or thoughts. Well, we're almost out of time. So I'm going to ask, because when will I get a chance to be with you again on this important topic? So I would like you to just to think really quickly what you might say in a parting shot to individuals that are listening and saying, okay, well, how do I help this experience, whether I'm a leader or a parent, whether I'm in the trenches or I'm a grandparent even, what might you suggest is the best ways that we can go about or help that they might have?
I'm going to mess very quickly with an acronym,
okay.
SEAL, S-E-A-L.
S-E-A-L.
So S stands for stop. So you're asking a youth to say, stop and think about, what should I do? Help them to be kind of a little bit analytical and think about, is what I'm doing helping this situation? Is it contributing to it? The next one is explain. That's the E part. And the explain is, if I were talking to you, Matt, and you were, say, the leader of a clique, I would explain, this is what you're doing. This is wrong. This is what you need to do, okay? The A part is to affirm. You might say, you know, I really like you, Matt. I want to affirm our relationship. I'm coming to you because I'm being loyal to you. This is how you're impacting me and others. Or the other part of A is, I admit I've been a contributor myself.
Right.
And I need to change. The L part is lock in or lock out. Lock in, look, I'm in this for the duration. I want to see some changes. I'm willing to change. Or lock out. It's over. I'm taking a vacation. This is not good for me. So I think this SEAL acronym can be really helpful to teenagers.
I'm finding it helpful. I'm not sure what I'm doing, but I want to stop it, and I appreciate the affirmations. I'm locking in. I'm locking in. This is great.
I think that ultimately, whether it be in our roles as parents or as leaders, I think a child, a youth, needs to know that we love them, we value them, we believe in them. We believe in their ability to deal with their problems in a constructive way, that we support them to understand that the power is really ultimately within themselves to know whether they will let outside pressures get them down or look to others that will support them and enhance them and make them feel that sense of belonging. As long as you have a child and a person, a young man or a young woman, with a good sense of self-worth, I think that's the most we can do to build up in every way that we can that spark to develop within them.
This is so good, Denise, and it sounds like the way you're talking about this isn't something you do one time and just say, okay, I affirmed you once.
No, this is a lifelong process. But this is, as leaders, you know, children and youth come into our lives and being there on a consistent basis, supporting them, loving them, putting our arms around them, I think that's the best we can do.
I agree so much with that. Love is key. And I think another thing is that the gospel always provides solutions, and we need to teach our children to turn to the Lord and turn to the gospel. And the world might provide problems, but the gospel provides solutions.
Nicely said.
Well, it's hard to add anything to what you've said. I love what you both said, and I just keep thinking the home needs to be a safe haven. Our kids are exposed to so much garbage, literally, out there every day, and the environments in which they move are so toxic at times, and our homes, and whatever they look like, if there's a single family home or two parents in a home or whatever, needs to be a safe haven where children feel safe and feel free to learn how to deal with the world.
Oh, thank you so much for your advice and counsel. And I couldn't add anything else to that other than I hope no one would ever give up in this experience. I think our Father in heaven will help us in all of our circumstances. I think sometimes we feel we're at the end of the rope. Youth aren't quite sure if there's ever going to be a tomorrow where things will get better, and parents wondering if they could ever influence. And I believe honestly that our Father in heaven, who is a loving Father, and models, actually, this is something I think is so important, models the very things that you have been talking about. If we can emulate the way that he deals with his children and then have hope that he will deal with us accordingly, what a blessing that will be. Thank goodness that there is a Father in heaven who is watching over and will come to our aid if we will allow it. So thank you very much. Thank you. You have been listening to Gospel Solutions for Families on the Mormon Channel, brought to you by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints.